Hi, this is Warwick Davis, and you're listening to the Friday Filibuster.
Hello, and welcome to Friday Filibuster, the latest episode of our intrepid podcast. I am Eric Asperschlager, Judge Eric Asperschlager, I guess you could say, hosting this week because Dave just told me I need to, because Dave is watching a Knicks game.
I'm here, just kind of, you know, just watching a Knicks game.
Dave, I'm feeling you're probably going to exploit my my ignorance about the length of the NBA basketball season. And I'm still going to be hosting while you're watching Knicks games in mid-August.
Yeah, if they were halfway decent, perhaps. But I think this should all be wrapped up by May or something.
All right. Well, I'll pencil that in on the calendar. also joining us this week, of course, is Judge Mac McIntyre. Mac, welcome.
Hello. This week's show has my full undivided attention.
Nice. Thank you, Mac. See, Dave, someone knows how to record a podcast. I guess you're actually recording the podcast, so you better know how to record.
That's right, yeah.
But all right, anyway, Friday Filibuster, we're getting together. We're going to talk about things we've been watching, things we've been reviewing, and then ambush each other with all kinds of craziness and send you off into the weekend. So let's start, like we always do, with things we've been watching. Dave, is there a timeout, or should I just go to Mac right now?
You just roll. I'm listening.
All right, let's go. Well, we'll start with Mac. We'll give Dave a chance to pause his TiVo or whatever he has.
All right. Over the weekend I was at a used bookstore, and you don't see this too often these days, but a few years ago, it seems like every big blockbuster movie had the novelization published, you know. And I'm at the used bookstore, and I come across from 1974 the novelization of Young Frankenstein. Yeah, the Mel Brooks film. And I'm like, okay, how do they turn this into a novel? Well, I sit down and I start reading it, and the author, Gilbert Perlman, has decided to rewrite Young Frankenstein as if it's an actual horror tale. So we have Young Frankenstein rewritten as if it's, you know, actual gothic horror.
So, you didn't just pick up a copy of Frankenstein and someone wrote the word young on the cover.
I wish. The very first gag in the movie is when we see the corpse in the coffin and someone tries to pull the book out of its hands and it won't let go. And that's all written very, very dramatically in the book about, you know, how it was, you know, holding on from beyond the grave and there was an evil spirit in the room and stuff. And of course, then you get to some of the, having seen the movie a million times, I've skipped ahead to some of my favorite bits. And, there's a part where Igor says, "Walk this way." And it says that, Dr. Frankenstein started mimicking Igor's movements without realizing what he was doing and what madness had overcome him at that moment.
Sounds dramatic.
Yes, it's very dramatic. And later on during the carriage ride, what's her name? Inga, was that it? Terry Gar, and you know, she shouts, "Werewolf," and then Igor responds, "Their wolf, their castle." And Dr. Frankenstein puzzles over this about the, you know, their possible meaning, and could this be broken language, or were they speaking in some kind of code? And this gave him a feeling of dread foreboding as they neared the castle. Yeah, it just goes on and on like this.
So. I would like to read a similarly toned novelization of Young Einstein.
Yes.
You can't be serious. Anyway.
So I haven't gotten to putting on the Ritz yet, but I can't wait to see how that's been rewritten.
It's almost like it was written kind of like a recent Will Ferrell movie where basically – you tell the joke, and then someone explains the joke to you afterwards, except right. in a more dramatic fashion. I'd imagine we've all had our experiences with novelizations of movies that have been less than impressive. Dave, do you have any?
Yeah, probably my most – I purchased and read because I was so thrilled to see it because I didn't know this movie was coming out. So when I saw the novelization, I was like, wow, I need to buy it and read it and find out the story now. Karate Kid 3. Saw it in a Walden's book. Was shocked that they made a third Karate Kid. Devoured it.
And how old were you?
Oof. Whenever it just came out. When did Karate Kid Part 3 come out?
I don't know. 2007.
I don't know. It must have been the late 80s, I suppose. But anyway. Yeah. So, and in fact, I guess it's a testament to the crappiness of the movie, maybe, but the novelization was superior.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, it's like the novelization of the Lord of the Rings movies.
That's right. But, or the Ten Commandments.
Yeah. It's a lot shorter in the novelization version. It's just the 10 of them. But yeah, I'm trying to think. I know I picked up a bunch of those. I think a lot of them through. Did you guys have when you were in school, like the not the bookmobile, but they like it was a Scholastic that would set up like shelves of books in your like library hallway, and they'd hand out forms to all the kids and basically make their parents pay retail price for all these books. You could take the little catalog home and you check which books you wanted to buy, and then give you the money, and then that's a pretty good scam they had going.
That was my Scholastic Book Day was one of my favorite days in school.
Oh, it was great, but I think you may have been paying premium for that service.
I think so. I think they was doing some serious marking up.
Normally they were like full quote unquote full length novels of probably 150 pages, but I remember when Who Framed Roger Rabbit came out, and I went to see it, and I loved it. And I can't have been that young, unfortunately. I was probably like 12, but maybe 11. We'll say I was 11. But we were away on vacation that summer. I think we were up in Maine. We were camping, and we went to a bookstore. And I was so nerdy that the thing I wanted to do more than anything was go to a bookstore. And I went there, and I saw they had a Roger Rabbit book, and it was a picture book. Like, it was basically like a oversized picture book. But I wanted it so badly that, I had my money and I laid it down and I got it. And I was so disappointed. Like, obviously it's like 10 pages long. So they cut out major sections of the story, and the dialogue's different, and it just did not recreate the experience for me. So we actually took the book back and returned it so I could get my $8 back or whatever.
Wow.
I know. Yeah.
You must've learned a lot of valuable lessons about consumerism and retail. Right. Retail capitalism. That was nice.
Yes, and I never bought anything ever again. Oh, boy. That's exciting, Mac. That's exciting. Dave, what have you been consuming your time with non-basketball related?
What to report? What's going on? I don't know. Trying to think of – it's 74, 73 New York. What is – watching Fringe, still like Fringe, though it's gotten pretty weird, where Olivia, the main character, gets possessed. This is a spoiler alert, but she actually gets possessed by Leonard Nimoy. What do you think of that?
Wow. We should all be so lucky.
And it's a little hit and miss because Anna Torv, who's the actress, tries to do like a Leonard Nimoy impression, so it's a little odd.
A character played by Leonard Nimoy or... Leonard Nimoy playing himself.
No. Character played by Leonard Nimoy. So that would have been something, though, huh?
It's possible. I mean, there's a certain self-awareness in that that I, but William Shatner can do it, then Leonard Nimoy should be able to.
Still a good show. Enjoyed Parks and Recreation a great deal last week when we had that big Harvest Festival.
That was fun.
Little Sebastian, right?
Yeah, Little Sebastian was great.
Yeah, that's.
Are you still watching Justified?
I'm a week behind now because again we do it on demand, so
sure.
New ones hit each week. So the last one I saw was when Boyd kind of turned the tables on his would-be co-conspirators.
Yep, that's a good episode.
Yeah, very good episode. Yeah.
Yeah, that was really good.
So that's. I think probably the new one's probably on there right now. So, but yeah, just still performing strong and. That's probably my favorite show on TV right now.
Yeah, the episode you haven't seen is a little more serialized, but it fleshes out some other relationships that are happening. They haven't gotten back to the Bennets really in a while. I know that the Dewey episode, they did have a pretty intense scene.
That's right, where Ma Bennett took a hammer to the guy's finger. Yeah. Pretty. I like how they kind of dole out her psychosis, you know?
Yeah. But she starts the season as this kind of, not necessarily a sweet old lady, but, you know, she knows what's going on, but she doesn't come across as being, you know, Tony Soprano or something. Or,
right, right.
The Martin Scorsese equivalent. But, yeah, she's really coming on strong.
I'm interested to see how they, I mean, it looks like the Loretta, the little girl, that subplot is going to play some kind of a role.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they've crossed that yet, but they certainly seem to be building towards an intersection.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely like that they haven't just replaced the Crowders with the Bennets. They've, you know, the Boyd storyline continues.
Right.
So they kind of have two main threads, you know, going on at once, you know, leaving out some of the Raylan and his ex-wife relationship stuff. But so they're building not toward it. It's not like Veronica Mars was just the new mystery of the season.
Yeah.
As awesome as the show was. You know, they haven't forgotten what happened in the first season, so I appreciate that.
And plus, it seems organic, like the Bennets are trying to position themselves. I mean, there's a vacuum now.
Right.
You know,
right.
In Harlan County. So it kind of makes sense that it would happen like that. So, so it's probably taken the number one spot as far as my favorite show on TV.
Good. So if Casey Kasem were announcing your favorite show.
Oh, yeah.
You'd be right there.
That's right.
Your long distance dedication.
That's right. So that's it for me.
Good, good. Well, it's been a while, so I think it's time for a little segment of old news with Eric Asperger. What do you say? So I've been on the Netflix Instant Watch a lot, and actually I've watched a lot of stuff recently. I don't know why. I've been trying to catch up on the past 20 years, I suppose, of viewing. So I watched a couple movies that are Friday filibuster favorites. First off, I watched John Carpenter's The Thing.
Now, were these for the first time? You've seen these movies?
For The Thing, I'm pretty sure it was. I have vague recollections of my dad and I watching what must have been the original when I was a kid, because I can't imagine you would have shown me the John Carpenter version, but I was like 8.
Yeah. I mean, that's hard to watch now.
Yeah. I mean, that movie is intense and has, you know, almost 30 years later, some of the most disturbing images I've ever seen in a movie.
Absolutely.
I mean, it kind of reminded me of, like, if you read like H.P. Lovecraft or Stephen King, and they describe certain sort of supernatural beings that you kind of read the description and you kind of get, you know, a sense from the words, but you realize that they could never actually depict it, you know, visually in a way that really, you know, carried that same weight, but somehow they did it in this movie. It's just, it's so over the top and so just creepy as hell.
All about the practical effects too.
Absolutely. That was a lot of creepy fun. Although I kind of left with a little bit of, maybe you guys can help me with this. I was a little unclear about how the alien worked. Was it one alien that basically just infected people, or
it was,
did the alien
it was
become
one alien.
The people?
It was one alien for sure. And yeah. What happened? I mean, it kills it and just takes over. Just takes upon the appearance. So there's no like
it's,
corpse left
yeah.
behind, right?
Right,
yeah.
But at the same time, they're like,
and then it makes itself look just like you, right?
But they're like multiple aliens go because they.
There's only one. I thought there was one.
But they kill the alien multiple times throughout the movie. I mean, take over one character and they're like. Burn the corpse.
Oh, shoot. I actually.
And then when, you know, you should rewatch it. It's on Netflix. But there are various scenes where the alien, you know, taken over body splits into various pieces. I mean, that's where we get the really disturbing image of the guy's upside down head with the spider legs. You know, and they kill the one body and then that goes on its merry way. So it must, I don't know, they kind of describe it as like an infection or some sort of. Like multiple part. I don't know if anyone out there knows.
I think that if it gets like split apart, but it's still one organism, and it can like reform. You know, it's like the T-1000 kind of.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for putting it in terms I can understand. Thank you for not using real life examples.
I will have to say that I'm not thrilled with the prospect of a prequel to The Thing.
Yeah, I read about that.
They've been talking about that for a while. Yeah.
Just, you know, mainly because I just love the beginning of that movie so much. I just love the start of the movie, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The dog's running away and the guys are desperately trying to catch it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just so mysterious.
Yeah. I mean, I guess at this point, if it's a prequel, you figure everyone knows what happens after it. But right. I guess it's kind of like trying, you know, when most films try to bring that kind of, you know, disturbing imagery to life and they kind of fail because what you see is never quite as, as satisfying as what you can imagine. And so finding out, you know, where the alien came from isn't going to, you know, might scratch some itch somewhere, but it's not really going to enlighten or change or improve on the movie that.
I think the idea with the prequel is that it shows, the camp that where they found where all the people were dead. It's going to show that story.
Yeah. And the story again, I just, lo- I mean, you know, the thing is so beautiful just because it's just, you know, this unknown entity just tearing apart this recluse, you know, this secluded group.
Right.
I mean, because it's, you know, the terror comes, you know, from both, you know, the effects, the horror gore effects, and, I don't know, the psychological mind F it does on everybody, you know?
Sure. Not knowing who's right. real and who's, yeah.
It's like claustrophobic
that's
and stuff.
That's the heart of the story. Right. The short story it's based on, Who Goes There, was all about, you know, not knowing, you know, who you can trust, that sort of thing. Definitely, you know. 1960s Red Scare sci-fi, so yeah, that's definitely a key element of the story.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously the way to tell if someone's an alien or human is ask them who won the World Series last year. That seems to be the test. You can tell someone's a Nazi or not by doing the same thing. So I carry that around. It was the Giants, by the way. But anyway, so yeah, that was the first thing. And then second one, I may have seen bits and pieces overall. Not as impressed with it as The Thing, and I might take some flack for this, but I watched Lost Boys.
That is a movie that I think if you haven't grown up with it, you may not. If you come to it with a fresh set of eyes, I could see that underperforming in a big way.
Sure, and that, I think that sort of ties into the discussion you had with Dan on this week's Objection. The same kind of thing of, you know, nostalgia can cover over a multitude of sins, and there are a lot of really fun things about Lost Boys and the vampire aspects. But it's just, it's amazing how overstuffed it feels considering very little happens. And I don't exactly know why.
The stuff that does happen doesn't make a whole lot of sense. If you really get down.
Yeah. There's not a whole lot, in the story that connects all the various pieces. It's just, everything just sort of happens and it happens very quickly and it's kind of weirdly paced. And the big twist at the end is that they were right all along, which is kind of weird. But,
And that their grandfather's a vampire hunter, and that could have come in handy earlier, though, you know?
Right, yeah. Maybe you could have, you know.
Like, where were you when your grandson was getting turned into a friggin' vampire, so.
Yeah, you know, you could have mentioned that.
But, of course, the greatest thing about Lost Boys is Sweaty Saxophone Man.
That's great. Yeah, that scene is just.
The Santa Carla Pier. Fantastic. Or Corey Haim wandering around in a bathrobe.
I mean, that scene at the concert, and their enthusiasm for looks like a WWF wrestler playing a saxophone,
is
about the most 80s image I could possibly come up with. I don't think you can sum up the decade any better.
No, that's good. That's true. Gratuitous, sweaty saxophone. That's all you need. And I believe, didn't Corey Haim's character have a George Michael poster prominently in his
really provocative
George Michael poster?
And that was considered manly back then.
I'm sure it was. No ill intent. It is a guilty pleasure and it is a nostalgic thing more than anything.
It wasn't terrible. I enjoyed it, but I just, it wasn't, not having grown up with it, I can cross that one off my my cinematic bucket list.
Shout out to Kiefer Sutherland, though, right?
Absolutely. He's totally in it.
Yes. Totally in it. Totally gets impaled by some antlers.
He does. Which I guess are made of wood?
I guess. Antlers are made of wood.
Wooden. Boats could be wooden. Okay.
From the woods.
From the woods. All right, so let's, okay, well, with that aside, so yeah, that's a little blast from the past. We'll move on to what's fresh and new, what we've been reviewing for the site. And Dave, I'll pick on you to go first.
Yeah, I talked about it on that Objection podcast, but apparently, according to Quentin Tarantino, this is the Australian equivalent of The Goonies, and it is BMX Bandits, starring a 16-year-old Nicole Kidman. Actually working on the review as we speak. Well, no, not as we speak, but...
No, because
that would be a little too much. yeah, that's like... I mean, it's... I guess you... I mean, I can half-ass the podcast and half-ass the review, but you're not left with anything. So I don't know how that maps. But anyway, BMX Bandits. And it's actually a pretty good little kids movie, I have to say. You know, as incoherent, as nonsensical as 80s kids movies we grew up watching. I mean, I defy you to tell me what makes sense in The Goonies. but BMX Bandits is, I would recommend it. It's a couple kids with Nicole Kidman. Their dream is to build a BMX dirt track for all the BMX urchins in Australia. They don't have any money, of course, but they stumble upon a hidden trove of walkie-talkies, which, I mean, that's kind of the MacGuffin, I suppose. But yeah, the walkie-talkies, which criminals have imported from the U.S. because Australia doesn't have the technology yet. And so they steal the walkie-talkies, they sell them to some fat, gullible kids, and the rest of the movie are the criminals chasing them around Australia. Or not, I don't know, the little town in Australia. The end.
So they need money to build dirt?
Yes.
Okay.
Dirt trap.
Just to shovel the dirt into a specific way.
Yeah,
sure. I guess that
pretty much
that dirt
doesn't come cheap.
Clear itself, you know. BMX Bandit. Okay, Mac, how about you?
Yeah, last year I reviewed this movie as Japanese horror movie called Death Tube, it was absolutely terrible. And so this week I'm reviewing the sequel, Death Tube 2.
Your target is the Death Tube go-to reviewer.
Apparently, yes. I've been labeled as the go-to guy for the Death Tube franchise. And
sadly, I think we can expect there to be more Death Tubes.
Yes, part two does leave things open for right. part three. But I will say this, Death Tube 2 was actually not god-awful.
Was it better than first Death Tube?
I will stick my neck out and say that, yeah, it's one of the rare sequels that's better than the first one.
That is a box quote.
Yeah, that's true. It's like the Godfather 2 of Death Tube, the Death Tube
fans. That's right. So the setup here is that people are kidnapped, they're put in these rooms, and they're filmed live on the internet where they're tortured and killed, right? And that was the first movie. Okay.
So what's the tube? Oh, is it like TV Tube, right? No, YouTube, right?
YouTube.
Okay, right. Yeah.
It's
I keep thinking
like a horror version of YouTube.
I keep thinking like Subway, that kind, you know, like a Subway or something. But
oh, no. No, it's they get the name from YouTube. And that's when you see the picture of the cover art, the Death Tube logo looks like the YouTube logo. Nice. It's all cute. But yeah, so that was the whole first movie was, okay, you're live on the internet, you're tortured, you're dead. Roll credits. That was the whole movie. It was just like violence and suffering for the sake of violence and suffering. No story. But in the sequel, our people who have been kidnapped, they get this idea in their heads that they're going to try to escape. Right? And just that really makes all the difference because the main characters of the story, they're actually doing something. You know? Instead of just huddling in a corner and crying and going, oh no, we're going to die, they're taking an action and they're actually, you know, fighting back and they're trying to escape. And maybe that doesn't seem like much of a difference in a horror movie, but it makes all the difference in the world.
I agree with that, actually. I agree.
So, yeah. And so instead of just, you know, torture for torture's sake, there's a chase that's going on. You're rooting for the good guys to escape, or if you're more cynical, you're rooting for the bad guys to catch them. So that being said, it's still not a horror masterpiece. It's still Death Tube, but... No, it's very low budget, and it's got that, you know, patented Japanese weirdness that shows up in a lot of Japanese horror movies. But overall, though, yeah, better than the first one. So for whatever that's
a worth. Ringing endorsement.
Does it have a Death Tube 2 colon something?
That's a good point.
No, the first one was Death Tube Broadcast Murder Show. That was the whole title.
Direct translation from Japanese, I'm sure.
I think so.
and I noticed that this one, it also has that same, on the cover art, it also says Broadcast Murder Show. So I don't know if that's the official title or if they just threw that on the cover art.
No, it's a great subtitle.
That's good. I was thinking it'd be like going viral or something like that.
I really thought that'd be great, but no.
Yeah, Tube 3. I can't. It has to be a literal translation. Sad time broadcast murder show. As well, I'm sorry. So did you request it, or did you were you blessed with it?
I did request it, but it was very low on the list. So
Well, beside the list, it counts. No one to blame but yourself. But well, I reviewed something good this week, or I'm reviewing something good this week. This week I'm watching 127 Hours, the new Danny Boyle movie.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
About the about Aaron, so based on a true story of this guy Aaron Ralston, who is a mountain climber, canyoneer, who was out hiking by himself, hadn't told anyone where he was going. He was in I think Utah, in canyons, slipped, fell, got his arm trapped by a rock, and he was stuck for 127 hours. And the movie and the story is about, you know, what he did to survive and what he ultimately did to escape. And I mean, I think by now everyone knows what happened. I'll remain relatively spoiler-free just in case you don't know. But, you know, I wasn't really sure what to expect from this movie. Did either of you guys see it?
You know, that was sent to me as a screener, you know, in the fall, and something I wanted to watch. I just never got around to seeing it.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like the kind of movie you could go, you know, many ways with. I remember hearing about the movie and seeing an ad for it on TV and it looking very kind of uplifting and inspirational and thinking, boy, they're really marketing that weird, because I figured it had to be, you know, a very kind of dour, almost thriller-like horror thing. But it really is, you know, an uplifting story in the end. I mean, it's gritty and it's, you know, moving emotionally, and it's kind of someone taken to the very brink, you know, and coming back. And I guess that's where the inspiration comes from.
Is it all like from? I mean, is it? I think what I thought maybe it turned me off was was it filmed like a camera? Like it was all home camera footage?
No, not at all. I mean,
it wasn't okay.
There, I mean, they use that. It's very much a Danny Boyle movie. So there's a lot of visual stuff going on, a lot of edits, a lot of the movie starts in this really kind of frantic, frenetic way. There's kind of a really cool song playing over. I don't know the name of the song, and they got basically like a triple split screen going on, showing these images of you know, crowds and people in cities and. Kind of eventually works its way to this guy as he's getting ready to go. And there's a throughout the course of the movie, he has various kind of fantasies and hallucinations and flashbacks and things. And it's really well put together. I mean, it's kind of a odd to say, but it reminded me a little bit of something like Scott Pilgrim, where it's the visual invention and you know, the style of you know, the directorial style is a big part of the movie. And I wouldn't have thought that from, you know, just the subject matter. It sounds like the kind of movie where it would be like a guy in a canyon and you spend the time just with him. You know, and it's the same token, like that kind of thing can be distracting in a lot of movies. You know, done by people who aren't as talented as someone like Danny Boyle, it can really, you know, create a barrier between the audience and the subject matter. But the way he does it, both visually and with just this really, clever audio cues and juxtapositions between silence and this kind of booming sound and music and you know, the landscape and all that kind of stuff. It really, you know, brings you into the experience, brings you into his mindset. So it's a very exciting, enthralling, moving movie. I mean, even if you know what's going to happen in the end, you know, you're right there with him, and it's really an experience. And you know, I like that it is ultimately that kind of story about someone, you know, facing the worst possible scenario and kind of coming back. I mean, I'm kind of a sucker for that kind of stuff. But it's not done in a kind of a ham-handed, ham-fisted way. It's really, it's a very well done movie. And the Blu-ray, I'm reviewing on Blu-ray, and it's one of the best looking and sounding Blu-rays I've reviewed in a long while. It's just really, really, really very impressive. So I would encourage you to check it out. But yeah, very nice. 127 hours. Very nice. Described in 127 minutes. Probably shorten this up. We can move right along now that we're at the half hour mark. Go to the next phase of the Friday filibuster, which is Mac's domain. Mac, take us there.
Okay, what we're going to do is we're going to go to DVDverdict.com. We're going to click on the upcoming DVD releases tab. And from there, we're going to click on the cover art gallery for March 29th. And we're just going to talk about what's on the list here and what jumps out at us is interesting or amusing or frightening. So, quite a lot on the list here this week. I see Disney's Tangled is on there, which I personally really enjoyed. I got a real kick out of.
Black Swan.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
All Dogs Go to Heaven and All Dogs Go to Heaven 2, both on Blu-ray for the first time, I would assume.
All the Scream movies, obviously, with Scream 4 coming out. I don't think I can remember. I remember very little about all those Scream movies, to tell you the truth, except for Skeet Ulrich's sweet high school mustache.
I really like the first one. The first one's a lot of fun. The sequels didn't excite me.
I remember watching Scream 2 with you, Dave.
Really?
On some college break, we went to Utica, the saddest town in the world, apparently. according to that link you...
Yeah, there's a poll, some study done, yeah. It's unfortunate.
It's unfortunate. But anyway, yeah, I remember watching it and kind of digging it. I never saw the third one, and I don't know that I'm going to see the fourth one, but...
Didn't Buster Bluth got the saddest award at Motherboy? Yeah, that's saddest.
Probably.
That's a very competitive...
So you also got the fourth season of Mad Men coming out.
That's right. A hit and miss season as far as I'm concerned. I don't know. I wasn't totally sold on that season.
I look forward to seeing it regardless.
Yeah, I definitely. I mean, it's still high quality and it's still better than a lot of the stuff on there. But it's a very interesting and weird twist. So, see, okay. The understated DVD release category, Zombie Women of Satan.
I wonder what that's about.
Now, could that possibly ever live up to that title?
I don't think so.
So got Teen Wolf on Blu-ray.
Oh, yeah, there's another 80s cult classic.
With kind of a cool-looking cover. They didn't really half-ass it. It looks like they put some thought into that. I don't know. There's something about it that kind of looks retro in a cool way. It's also... Star Trek collection on Blu-ray that is just Star Trek 2 and Star Trek 4. So, you know, it's the one you probably want to get.
That's actually, I mean, arguably those are two of the more popular ones, right?
Yeah, that's probably why they're doing that. Are they trying to appeal to people who, you know, are only casual viewers?
See, I'm surprised by that, because typically, they try to pin one of the crappy ones, right?
Yeah.
I think probably depending on who you talk to, Star Trek 4 is... I'd be interested in putting that in the same discussion as a Superman 2 or a Goonies, because I think
yeah.
As cool as fondly as I remember that movie, just kind of thinking back on basically what it's about.
Yeah, I know, you're right.
Makes me wonder whether it really,
yeah,
really
exactly holds up. Right. The big action showdown is a face-off between the Starship Enterprise and one whaling vessel. I think that's a significant lack in tension.
Although it did teach me the square term double dumbass. So,
wow, nice.
I didn't know that one before. What else we got?
Ooh, magic spells and magic rituals. How to?
There you go.
Nice. Wow. Do you think they chose that particular witch for any reason?
Anything else? There's a lot of stuff this week.
There's a lot of stuff.
As always, there's a lot of stuff. Some of it looking pretty good. Quite a lot of it, actually. Okay. Let's. I think that takes us to the fan favorite section. I'm assuming both that it's a favorite and that we have fans. The sleaziest, inadvertently sleaziest sounding DVD release of the week. Dave, you can go first.
How about Motherload?
All right, Mac.
Let's see. I'm gonna go with Hubble.
Is it like astronaut porn?
I'll go with Highway to Heaven. Okay. And that'll take us into the final phase, the Friday filibuster, the ambush topic section, wherein we spring some sort of topic on each other and see what emerges. from it. So, Dave, has that? How's the game going, first of all?
Yeah, it's not going well, to be honest. If I'm honest with you, it's not going well.
What's the score?
We're down 8 now.
Oh, how long? How many minutes?
About 7 minutes.
Okay.
So.
I'm sorry to hear that. Well,
yeah, whatever.
Do you want to go first? Your spirits?
Yeah, how about okay, hats.
Probably the easiest topic we've ever had, and I can't think of it. Hold on.
Chapeaus.
I'll go with Gene Wilder's hat in Willy Wonka.
Oh, good
Willy
one.
Wonka, actually.
Yes.
Classic.
Another movie that I think that one would still hold up.
It would.
You have to have a certain amount of nostalgia for it, but there's enough kind of quirky, funny stuff that happens, like legitimately funny stuff that happens in that movie.
I will say, though, I'm amazed at how poor the Bucket family is. Ever since I watched that movie, they're cataclysmically poor. You know, like the four old people and their bed sores in that bed. And I mean, they eat like cabbage water, right?
Right.
Because mom like just works at this laundry that just looks like the Temple of Doom.
And yet, I'd imagine that compared to the Roald Dahl's original story, they're, you know,
that's
they're
right. Kind of
middle class, upper middle class.
Yeah, you're right.
some of the effects are kind of understated in that movie.
Yeah, there's. I don't mean, there'll always be that. Obviously, the boat tour, you know, that just out
sure.
where.
Oh yeah.
did Willy Wonka? Did his hat ever have any practical application at all? Like, was he pulling candy out of it? I can't remember. I mean, it's a classic look for sure. Right?
Yeah. I don't know if he had any, it made him look taller, I guess. I think in the book he was like a short kind of gnomish fellow, but.
That's true. All right.
Let's see. For me, going back to the 80s again, I'm going to go with the classic Dungeons and Dragons Saturday morning cartoon.
Yes, right.
With our magician character, Presto, who would take off his hat and say a few magic words, usually with some 20th century phrases thrown in. And he'd reach into the hat and pull out whatever. And you never knew what his crazy spell was going to be in each week. It was wacky comedy. And
Did he know what it was?
What was it?
I mean, did he know what the spell was? Like
he would try to do something like one time a giant monster was attacking, and he hastily came up with some magic words, reached in the hat, and he pulled out a giant cannon. And we're like, "Oh, great, a cannon! We're gonna blow this monster to pieces!" But they had no cannon ball.
Ah,
so you know, crazy stuff like that. And
that episode was written, of course, by O. Henry.
That's right. And, you know, but sometimes it worked perfectly. Sometimes it was just something completely random. But, you know, my favorite parts would be something that appeared to be useless, but then they found some crazy use for it that saved the day. So what always bugged me about Presto was that the other characters would always have to tell him to use his magic. You know, it's like, oh, no, how are we going to get out of this one? And they said, well, gee, Presto, why don't you use your magic hat? And he'd be like, oh, yeah, why don't I do that? And then he would. And That happened like in every episode. It's like, you know, why can't he ever think to use his magic powers himself instead of always having to be reminded?
I debate this to Mac, but you've probably thought about that more critically than anyone else associated with this show. let's see. For me, I'm going to go with the obvious odd job.
Oh, yeah.
I always wondered, like, what it was exactly. I mean, did they ever get into, like, I mean, was it like plate steel or something? The physics never made sense to me. I mean, maybe it was a regular hat and he was just a fantastic thrower.
I don't know. It sliced the head off of like a marble statue.
Now, it must have been metal, though, because when he went to grab it, that's how Bond took him out, right? He applied the electricity. So I guess there was like a metal rim on it. So, but a pretty cool affectation. And Oddjob, of course, would go on to get fame as the most annoying multiplayer character in GoldenEye N64.
All right. So hats. Mac, you can go next.
Okay. Giant spiders. Or for this discussion, we can just go ahead and include merely large spiders.
Mm. I like the big general spider at the end of Arachnophobia.
Oh, yeah.
Just a great little movie. Just a really great little, you know, I don't know if it's underrated or not, but maybe it is because you never hear about it. It doesn't get any release, you know, special releases. It's not on Blu-ray. But that was a pretty cool, that's a pretty cool effect. I think they mixed like a puppet spider and, like a real one. And you could tell because like their puppet one was gigantic, like something you'd find in Middle Earth. Oh, I may have just taken someone's, but anyway, that's pretty good. And just a shout out to Arachnophobia anyway.
Totally. I remember after seeing that movie, my friend kept trying to convince me that it was a real spider at the end. He's like, dude, it was totally real. They got a real one and they trained it and it was doing all the jumps and stuff. And I'm like, are you sure? Yeah, no, it was all 100% real. So, to this day, I'm not convinced.
Well, Dave, since you actually took mine, nice. I guess I'll take what's probably Max. I'll go with the Lord of the Rings, the giant spider that I... What was it?
Shelob, right?
Yeah. Shelob. I kept wanting to call it Shaloop.
Like Tony Shaloop.
Well, because I remember, of course, that you know the spider was an obsessive compulsive who you know had to wash his hands and never touch anything.
Yes,
that spider come at the end of Two Towers or the beginning of Return of the King?
Return of the King.
All right.
Yep.
It was at the end of the book Two Towers, but that's moved it to the beginning of the movie. Yep.
That was pretty good. Pretty good CGI work, too, I have to say.
Yeah, I really have to watch that movie again, the last one specifically, because I saw the first two multiple times. I've only seen the third one once, because I saw it in theaters, and then I got the special edition, whatever, the extended version, on DVD and for Christmas that year. And I wanted to basically say, okay, I can't watch this until I watch them all together, and that has never happened. And now that like the Blu-rays are coming out, I said, well, I guess I'll have to wait for that. So I probably will never see that movie ever again because I can't just break down and watch it.
The first step is to be honest, I suppose. I mean, it's quite an undertaking.
Right, yeah. Someday when I mean, these days I barely have half an hour to myself. I'm not sure where I'm going to come up with 15 hours to watch it.
That's right.
Well, okay, Max, so how many of yours did we take?
Let's see. I'll admit I was thinking Arachnophobia.
Nice.
So as for backup, we'll go with a good old Mystery Science Theater favorite with the giant spider invasion, where the special effects folks, they basically took a car and like built a spider shell around it with big dangly legs, and we're just kind of driving this car down the street in the hopes that it would look like a spider. And fortunately, they filmed it at night with poor lighting in the hopes of trying to, like, you know, darken it so you couldn't tell how fake it was, but didn't get past you know, our crew on the Satellite of Love, that's for sure.
Indeed. There are several giant whatever movies that they skewered. They did the ants, that ant one. No, not them, but there was another one. No, it was Grasshoppers. Was that Grasshoppers?
It was the beginning of the end, yeah.
Right, Grasshoppers. Yeah, they just recently re-released that one.
Yeah, where the special effect was they took a photo of a skyrise building and pointed the camera and set the grasshopper on the photo to make it look like it was climbing up the building.
And those are practical special effects, Dave. You gotta love that.
That's right.
All right. So I'll wrap things up. My topic, Carnage.
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 All right, I guess I'll just take another excuse to talk about this. It was someone had posted this on Facebook. I was thinking about it, but they posted how they got a copy of Silver Dream Racer. So we've talked about Silver Dream Racer, and it's one of my favorite alternate ending movies. You know, movies with alternate endings. And you want to talk about Carnage? It's great Carnage at the end there, especially when you look at it in context of the. You know, the American version. And of course, the story really quick is a guy, he gets his motorcycle, the Silver Dream Racer. He's, you know, it's one of those underdog sports movies. And, you know, the American version ends with him crossing the finish line, beating the odds, everybody loving him, great music kicks in. But the true version, his bike falls apart, and in slow motion, he dies a gruesome, fiery death. fantastic twist, especially in a movie that had such a strong, optimistic sound to it, Silver Dream Racer. Unfortunate.
Let's see for me. How about the last 30 or perhaps 45 minutes of Peter Jackson's Dead Alive?
Yeah, that's true.
Very good. Also known as Brain Dead. Just one insane gore effect after another.
Hasn't been topped yet, as far as I'm concerned.
Probably not.
As far as over the top.
Yeah. Well, that's because you haven't seen The Hobbit yet. Yeah, that was actually going to be my backup if anyone took my actual answer. But this is also based on my Netflix instant watching recently. Another movie that I do remember seeing when I was a kid, but rewatching American Werewolf in London.
Oh yeah,
Has some, you know, it has some bloody moments. But the end of that movie, like in the werewolf
running
runs,
him
out
up,
of,
right?
or runs out of the porn theater, and basically like. It's not that the werewolf, I mean, he does bite off that police captain's head or whatever, but basically then he runs off and, like, runs in front of a bus, and there's this huge pileup where people, like, the cars are crashing into each other, people are flying out of windshields and getting run over by other, it's crazy. Like, and it's not the werewolf doing it, it's cars, people just dying from being in this pileup caused by this werewolf. I mean, it's a crazy, crazy ending. It's a pretty good movie.
That's a good movie.
That's an interesting movie.
It's a real
roller coaster. Speaking of practical effects, probably is my vote for the greatest ever.
Yeah, with the transformation sequence.
Absolutely.
Yeah, with the then really kind of quirky use of the soundtrack and kind of an abrupt ending, but I think there's not a whole lot more you can wrap up after.
Right. Right.
After they off the guy.
Yeah, it is what it is. Right.
Yeah, that was good though. Good times. So yeah, that was my Carnage. What better way to end a Friday filibuster?
Nice.
Did we finish the podcast before the game ended?
Yeah, game's still going.
Wow. So we are more efficient than the New York Knicks.
Unfortunately, that's not saying very much these days.
We're also winners, so no.
Unlike the New York Knicks.
Oh, sad. Oh well. Well. This takes us to the end of another Friday filibuster. Thanks, as always, to Mac and to Dave for making me host so he could watch his beloved basketball. Divide his attention yet again. And until next week, you can, I don't know, can they write us and stuff?
Sure. Send us a postcard?
Yeah, you can do that. I assume you can like send a telegram like Western Union or...
Sure.
I imagine. Do people ever email us, Dave? By us?
No.
If you
get spam first, once in a while, so spammers, please feel free to keep it coming.
But if you're out there listening, you want to be the first. I mean, out of the first, I bet there've been people in the past. But if you want to be the most recent, feel free to do that at what Friday Filibuster at DVD Vertigo.
Correct.
That was a guess. Check everything out at DVDVertigo.com. Check out. Dave's other podcast, the one he puts more effort into, Objection, and all the other podcasts over at DVD Verdict. There's a lot to choose from, and read the reviews and click on links and I don't know, buy stuff I guess to support the site and generally be a good citizen of DVD Verdict and a good Friday filibuster listener. And with that public service announcement, I will throw it to Mac to take us away.
What do you mean, Flash Gordon approaching?